Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Julie Lehrman, who has written numerous books on entity framework and has acted as a mentor from her home in Vermont, and who also has the distinguishing characteristic of sharing my initials. Julie, how are you?
Hello, Jesse. I hadn't thought about the JL thing. Any chance that your middle initial is H?
No, my middle initial is NMI.
I'm not even asking. I'm doing great. We're unfortunately, middle of winter here in Vermont, and it's raining. We haven't had much of a ski season, but it's been pretty good for productivity, getting some work done.
Yeah, well, down here in the flatlands of Massachusetts, we're happy not to have the snow. Thank you very much. So I think you're best known for your books on entity framework. Is that a fair statement?
I would say these days that's absolutely a fair statement.
So tell me how you came to entity framework.
Well, entity framework was actually a great progression from all the work I was already doing with ADO.net. I've always been somewhat of a data geek. And I had plenty of interaction with the ADO.net team. And when they first started playing with Entity Framework, well, when it really came out of Microsoft Research and they had already started doing some work on it, I got invited to a little first glimpse of it during, it was TechEd 2006. That was quite a while ago.
That's funny. I was just going to comment on, gee, I didn't realize it was so recent. That's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah. Well, in computer time.
That's true.
That's a long time ago. And, it was intriguing to me just because it was a whole new way, for me, a whole new way of looking at data access because I hadn't been using ORMs before. And so I had a lot of fun playing with it. And because it was the early days and there wasn't a lot of information, I had the extra fun of doing a lot of my own discovery. Which is great. I mean, when you've got time to do that. And I became curiouser and curiouser about it. And a lot of people were really kind of ignoring it because, they'd been down this road before with Microsoft and the products hadn't come to fruition. So they didn't have, a lot of people didn't have a lot of faith that Entity Framework was going to see the light of day. And I, it wasn't like I was making a bet or taking a gamble. I was just kind of following the fun of learning about it. And with everybody ignoring it, I suddenly got into a position where I knew more than a lot of people about it. So now, of course, I have to struggle to stay ahead.
So tell me about the basics of Entity Framework. What's it do and where is it used?
Well, Entity Framework is a data access technology for .NET. And its original concept was to have a visual model representing your domain model that's on the client side in your application. And then working with that model, when you're working with code, you can focus on coding against that model. And then Entity Framework will take care of how to go back from the model back and forth with the database. So for me, especially this was, again, the first time using an ORM, object relational mapper, it meant I didn't have to write all that data access code anymore. I didn't have to worry about what the structure or the schema of the database was, what the stored procedures were called, what the parameters I needed every time I had to retrieve some data or persist data back to the database. I got to focus on working with a model that represented my classes, my application domain.
Now, ORMs have been around for a while, but EF seems to have really reset the standard on using ORMs in .NET. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's in the box. It's part of .NET. It's part of Visual Studio. So while there's, plenty of development teams all over the world that don't have any problems whatsoever using third-party stuff, there's also a lot of people who are a little timid about that.
Okay. The newest part of Entity Framework is Code First.
Code First, yes. and the DB context along with that.
Okay, tell me about the DB context, and then we'll come back to code first.
Well, DB context is a class, actually a set of classes. It's referred to as the DB context API. A set of classes on top of what's in Entity Framework that just takes a lot of the coding that we do against the Entity Framework and kind of encapsulates it in a simpler surface. So it's a lot less members, a lot less functions and properties to interact with. Plus, the team took some things that we were doing frequently in Entity Framework that wasn't easy to do and made simpler methods and ways of accessing those features from the DB context. We always have the ability to go down and work with the underlying core piece of Entity Framework if we want to, but the DB context really exposes the most commonly used pieces of Entity Framework for developers to work with and makes it, in a lot of cases, makes it easier for them to access those features.
Okay, great. And tell me about code first, which is, I have to say, the part of Entity Framework that I find most intriguing and exciting.
Oh, absolutely. So I originally described Entity Framework as a tool that gives you a visual model that represents your domain. And that's really great for a lot of people, but there's a lot of developers who don't want to have to deal with a designer. They just want to have their own code. They might have existing code to represent their domain classes, or they might be starting a new project and writing their own, but they really just want to write code. They don't want to have to deal with a designer and then have to rely on code generation from the designer to their classes to get what they want. So code first takes a new approach to building your model. Now, your model isn't necessarily a visual model. It's just a model. Some cases, it's represented visually. In other cases, it's represented in code. So now we define our model by starting with our code, our classes, and then if Entity Framework needs any help figuring out how to map back to the database, you can add configurations to that.
So you're working with POCO, then, with plain old CLR classes.
Yes, and that support was actually already introduced in Entity Framework 4. So we had POCO capabilities, but you still were starting with a model and then generating POCO classes from the visual model. Here, we're skipping the visual model completely, and we use our own simple POCO classes, and then they can be part of, they can engage with Entity Framework.
And do those classes need to be decorated with attributes?
No, they don't need to be. So in order for Entity Framework to be able to use those classes in its work, it does need to have an understanding of how to get from the classes to the database. And there's a concept called, a pattern called convention over configuration. So by convention or by default, you can expect some typical behaviors. And if you want something that's beyond that, then you can configure on top of that. And Code First uses convention over configuration. So behind the scenes, Code First will read your classes and infer how those classes should map back to the database. Then if you need to tweak any of that, right, if some of the things it's inferring is not exactly what you need, then you can add configurations. Now I'm finally getting back to the attributes you mentioned, decorating with attributes. There's two ways to apply the configurations. One is through attributes on the properties or the type of your classes. The other is through something called the Fluent API. So you're not touching your classes and adding Entity Framework type of information to them. Because, you know, if I'm working with my domain classes, I don't really care that the column it maps to in the database has a different name, right? I personally might not want my class to have that information. So with a Fluent API, you can actually tie into the DB context and tell the context how it should create the mapping between your classes and the database.
So that keeps your classes clean of the attributes and clean of any knowledge of database structure.
If that's the style that you're after, yeah. Another interesting thing about the Fluent API is that this represents the universe of all the configurations you can apply to your classes so that Code First knows how to work with them. Whereas with the attributes, also called data annotations, with those attributes, we have only a subset of those capabilities, the mapping capabilities.
So walk me through a very simple example. Let's say I'm a developer and I want to create an incredibly simple relational database to store the data in my program. And my program consists of, to use a classic example, consists of books, and the books have authors and they have publishers. And that's all I want to be able to persist.
And that's where you're starting with.
Yes.
You don't have your database already, right?
Right.
Well, this is another nice feature of Code First, is if you don't have an existing database, using the same logic that it uses to infer how to map to the database, it in fact is kind of defining what the schema of the database, what its expectation is of what the database schema should look like. So it can go the next step and actually generate that database for you. So that's the first thing to consider when you're starting a brand new application, especially if it's a simple application, right? And you can trust the database generation to be just how you want it to be. So you would start by writing out your classes, creating your classes. This piece of it has nothing to do with Entity Framework, right? It's just creating classes for your application. Then the next piece is to create a context class based on the DB context to manage those classes and to let those classes participate in Entity Framework. And when you create this DB context, then you'll have references in there, actually properties, that represent sets of your classes. So now the DB context and Entity Framework has knowledge of your domain classes. So we'll use the context and those sets to do queries and to do persistence. So Entity Framework is really what's controlling that interaction. And your classes don't have to have any knowledge of Entity Framework at all.
So the key step here is creating a class that derives from, what is it, DB context?
Or? DB context, yeah.
Okay. And in that, you're going to identify which of the classes you're concerned about and that you want to persist?
Yes. And from the perspective of Code First, that's kind of helping you define the model, right? That's the model that it works with. And if you are familiar, if you've been using Entity Framework and familiar with using the entity data model, that visual model, the context based on the classes you tell it about and other classes it can reach. So you might want to expose sets of books, but you might not want to have a way to query publishers for some reason. You want only the publishers to be accessible through the books, right? You're going to start with the authors or something like that.
Okay.
So you might have a publisher class, but you may not tell the context about the publishers. But as long as the context is aware of the other classes and publisher is reachable from one of those classes, then it will get pulled into the model as well. So the context will understand how to work with that. So that's how it creates the model. That's how it creates the model that Entity Framework is built to work with. It just creates it in memory instead of creating the physical model that we're used to with the EDMX.
Now, your latest book is called Code First.
Programming Entity Framework Code First.
Programming Entity Framework Code First. And if someone wanted to get started with Code First programming, does that stand on its own, or do they need first to read your Entity Framework book to really understand what's going on?
It does not stand on its own. The Code First book is, first, what I was doing, my co-author Rowan Miller and I, was writing a book for what O'Reilly Media refers to as their real-time series. So they aim for shorter books that they can release more quickly instead of writing a whole huge book like I've done a few times in the past, which takes a long time to write and takes a long time to read. So the Code First book focuses solely on the mappings and the database, how the database is created. I mean, that's almost 200 pages that we have in there of just that information. But we go into how the context understands the model based on the combination of your classes and configurations, and how to do the configurations, how to achieve all types of different things. But that book doesn't then dig into how to actually write real applications and how, and it also leans on a lot of information that's already exposed in my larger book, Programming Entity Framework, which is about the core API for people who really want to understand how things are working under the covers, because I really believe that that gives you so much more power to understand what it is you're working with, especially when things don't go exactly the way you expect them to be. So talking about things like performance and security and testing and all kinds of things like that. I've got that, and we've got that in the big book. And Rowan and I are just wrapping up the next book in the real-time series on Programming Entity Framework. And this one focuses on the DB context. So all the things that you can do with it. And again, we're not really getting into big application patterns, although we do touch on testing and mostly we talk a little bit about using some of the features for testing. But these individual books are not designed for the whole huge picture like a full book is. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of people who are new to Entity Framework and they're still reading the Entity Framework, the main book, the 900-page book, to get the core information about Entity Framework and skipping the chapters that they know might be a little bit irrelevant because they'll be using Code First, and then they're reading the Code First book on top of that, so they really have a much better understanding of how everything goes together.
That makes a lot of sense. So you start with the Programming Entity Framework book, but knowing that you're interested in Code First, perhaps skipping some of the details of Model First and then picking up the Code First book.
And how to customize the model and the designer, right? So that would be redundant. On the other hand, when you're learning how to build hierarchies in the model in the big book, you may not, but you're going to Code First, so you may not care how to, you know, literally do the interaction with a model, but you're going to be interested in all of the information about the effect of it, because I first show how to do the hierarchy in the model, and then I say, okay, now let's do some code against it and see how all that works. So the Code First book, we show how to build hierarchies when you're using Code First and the configurations. And I show a little bit about interacting with that in code, but then point back to the bigger book to say for, you know, a more thorough look at how you're going to, you know, how things work when you've got hierarchies in your model and your application, you're going to learn that better there.
And just as an aside, what platform are you doing these demonstrations on?
Do you mean versus C sharp versus VB?
No, I'm assuming it's C sharp.
C sharp, yeah.
But I guess my question is: Are your demo programs console applications? Are they WPF applications?
Good question. In the Code First book, we chose to do everything as a console app because that gives everybody the opportunity to use it. If people are using, you know, no matter what SKU of Visual Studio they're using, they'll have access to a console app. They probably won't if they're using the web version, right? But we thought about using just automated tests to demonstrate it and realize it just wouldn't be fair to people who have never used them before or are using Visual Studio Express, because those tools aren't there, and we didn't want to have to, you know, start our Entity Framework book out with 100 pages on how to do unit tests and code tests, right, automated testing. So that is all in console app. The DB context book is mostly console app, but towards the end, since I do spend some time on automated testing, I definitely am using automated testing, and I'm just using what's MS test. In the big book, when I'm showing, you know, how this little thing works, how that works, That's all in console app, but then I have entire chapters devoted to, okay, now that you've learned this, let's see how you would use it in a WPF application, or how would you use it in a WCF service? So I do a lot of that in the larger book.
Makes good sense, and makes it available to folks who are using Visual Studio Express and make the cost of entry far lower. Let me ask you an incredibly ignorant question. Where does Link fit in with Entity Framework?
Oh, Link was actually devised originally outside of the data access team. That Link came out of the C# team, as I'm sure you're well aware of, originally as a way to just query objects in memory. And then they created Link to SQL. By that time, the data access team was well into designing Entity Framework and had been using Entity SQL, which is a textual way of expressing a query. They saw Link and said, oh, this is just what we need to, you know, this makes so much more sense. So they created Link to Entities. When the first version of Entity Framework came out, we had Entity SQL or Link to Entities that we could use. But by the time we got to the second version of Entity Framework, it became pretty obvious that hardly anybody was using Entity SQL, that they're really just using it for real edge cases when you need something very specialized. If you're using DB context for your entity framework programming, then there actually is no way to use Entity SQL with a DB context, because, you know, at this point it just seemed obvious that, you know, the most common use is linked to entities. That's what people are basically using. So if we're focusing on the API where we're just using, you know, the most common things, it doesn't make sense to bring Entity SQL into the mix and give people that question again. What do I do with Entity SQL? Why do I want this instead of linked to entities? So link to entities is just a special version of link to objects that just takes into account that we're going to be working against entity framework and an entity data model.
Now let me take you in a slightly different direction. Your work is basically mentoring folks in entity framework.
Well, that's part of my work. You know, as an independent, you were for many years, right? You just do a little bit of everything. So writing, doing videos for Pluralsight, sometimes for MSDN, and then I have to work for a living too. So one of the things I really, really enjoy doing is mentoring developers and mentoring other development teams. Mostly that's going to be around Entity Framework, but I also have found a lot of times, especially when I'm working with independent developers instead of a team, a lot of times they're people who have a similar background as me, just kind of, you know, been programming for a long time and, you know, maybe did some Fox Pro in the past and Visual Basic 5 and Visual Basic 6 and just kind of came up that way and are using kind of older patterns and older habits. And one of the things I've found was been really interesting exposing developers to some of the concepts of domain-driven development, the part of that that applies to an individual developer and how that impacts your code, and also to automated testing. And that's been really, really fun to be able to, because we come from the same background, so they think the same way I do, and they're going down a path that I've been down. So my perspective on moving them from one place to the next makes a lot of sense for them, because we're coming from the same place. So I've enjoyed that a lot. And then working with development teams, that has been so much fun. Sometimes I'll go on site and spend how I explain it, 2 or 3 days locked in a room with a development team. And I swear I learn more than they do. They learn a lot about Entity Framework. We'll be with architects and just all these different developers that have so many talents. And we just, you know, we do code reviews. They show me what they've been doing and things that they were wondering if they were doing it right, if they, you know, there was a better way to do it, or places in their code where they were having a problem. So that's a ton of fun to work on.
And tell me very briefly about domain-driven development.
Oh, Have you got a few hours? No, it's actually a big thing. Domain-driven development is it's a large scope, and my focus actually is pretty narrow within there, because I've been taking what makes sense to me and in terms of how I'm working and the kind of work that I'm doing, and I'm just taking pieces of it. Domain-driven development was really kind of codified by Eric Evans, who was up in Maine. And he wrote, you know, the Bible on domain-driven development, where he just really sat down and thought about the patterns of not just coding, but working, how teams are working together, and really, what's really importantly, working with clients. Really, the whole process from beginning to end of meeting with the clients and understanding their needs and helping them understand their needs, not just, you know, sitting down and writing an application with a lot of presumptions of how people work. But out of, you know, through this whole process, one of the things that's really bubbled up for me is this idea of bounded contexts and really having a specified view of pieces of an application, and how the more you think about what really belongs in those pieces, things just kind of fall into place and sort themselves out, so that you really have a lot of great organization. You don't have a lot of overlap between pieces of your application. So the whole concept is actually, like I said, it's very big, there's not a lot of people who will call themselves domain-driven design experts, because it just takes years of really being engaged in this to understand the beauty of it. And well, I think the beauty of it is apparent a little more quickly, but understanding, to just get really good at it, really good at seeing, you know, where the lines are and between different contexts in your applications, or where things are more in common that you might want to pull them together. I took a 4-day class with Eric, which was just really, really enlightening. He's also an amazing teacher. So it's kind of like a religion.
It sounds a little S-like.
Yeah. But so, like I said, I've kind of glommed onto specific things that spoke to me in the perspective of the work that I'm doing and the work that some of my clients are doing. So I'm able to share with them the pieces that make sense. Does that make sense to you?
That makes terrific sense.
Instead of the whole thing. And it's the same thing trying to share with developers about automated testing, as opposed to saying, well, it's, you know, test-driven development, right? Because that's deep. TDD is deep, and TDD is a really big commitment. But, you know, if you back up, and there's still, you know, just the whole layer of automated testing itself is so hugely beneficial. And I have so many times walked in to work with clients, and this more happens with independent developers who, you know, I know how that is. You know, you kind of get stuck doing the things you know how to do if you're not on a team where you've got other people to learn from. And, you know, just as a prime example, the developer who's, you know, writing some code, thinking through some code, and then they open up a Windows form or a WPF form and put some buttons and text boxes on it so that they can see if their idea for their code works, right? And I go, oh, wait, let me show you something, right? Instead of going and saying, oh, I'm going to teach you about, you know, this, drop everything, we're going to focus on this. When I see this obvious need, like, it just, you know, if I can just shift them over to seeing the beauty of just not having to deal with, you know, that it just makes no sense to open up a WPF form, put some buttons and text boxes on it to make sure the code you're writing works. And they get it. They totally get it. And I love it.